Welcome to the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. I'm Lance Carter. Any day I can talk to James Cromwell, I consider a perfect day. And as you probably know, the artist was just nominated for 10 Academy Award nominations, most notably for Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actress, and Best Director. James Cromwell was part of the success of that film. As I told him in the interview, I saw a lot of the artist through the sympathetic eyes of his character Clifton, George Valentine's devoted chauffeur. The Artist is absolutely one of my favorite films of the year, and it was truly an honor to speak with him. He's had such a great career, starting with his first TV appearance on a 1974 episode of The Rockford Files, and then dozens of TV and film work followed with one of his greatest achievements, Babe, where he was nominated for an Academy Award with only 16 lines. How great is that? I really do appreciate it when you support the advertisers. Every little click does help. You will be completely surprised at that. Don't forget, we also sell casting director and agent mailing labels and have a bunch of other cool actor services and resources available. You can check all of that out on the site, dailyactor.com. And now, here's James Cromwell.
The Artist, man, it's so unique and wonderful, and when I watched the film, I didn't even want to leave the theater. I was just made me so happy to watch it.
That's right.
You know?
Yes, it does.
How were you first approached about the film?
My agent called me up and said there's some French directors doing a black and white style film with two people you never heard of. I thought the guy has to be nuts. Then they sent me, not the script, because it wasn't a script, it's a short story, beautifully printed on a very nice stock with a spirally bound. Photographs of Jean Berenice in costume, in front of Paramount or whatever. And I thought, wow, somebody's put a lot of thought into this, and they're here doing it. You know, at least I can do is meet with the director. I had a lot of questions. It was a very long lunch. I didn't want to be in a film, especially not being paid very much, and I didn't want to do a character that was just in the background of no one. I mean, I've done my 16-line character. It got me an Academy Award nomination, but, I thought, well, why do it? So I wanted to know whether he was just using the silence and the black and white as a gimmick, and that this story might not have any relevance to a contemporary audience. Just be sort of an homage, because I had seen a not very good silent film prior to the working on The Artist, and I thought, But when you meet with Michel, of course, besides the fact that he's charming, he knows exactly what he wants to do, and he's very clear about it. He's not at all pretentious, and we didn't. When you audition a director, because that's what you do, they think they audition you, but you audition them as well.
In your category, you audition. I'm the one that is begging for the roles. So.
Well, you always have to remember, it's sort of even Steven. You mustn't give up all your power. If you do, it's to your detriment. But he was delightful, and I think I got him. I liked his sweetness. I liked his certitude. I liked the vision that he had. I liked the fact that he was an artist, and that he was, and not only was he going to get to do his art because somebody else believed in him, but he had the courage to be an artist, and not compromise it. And I thought, I want to be part of that.
When you left the meeting, before you left the meeting, did you say, I'll do it, or did you kind of be coy?
Oh, no, sir. I just said, let's do it.
Yeah.
I said, let's do it. John Goodman said, in about 5 minutes. I'm a little slower than John, so, I get around. No, when I choose, I choose. I don't do coy.
How did you, prepare your character? Because there wasn't a lot on the page,
Well, my first role in film, the first film I ever did was Murder by Death, and I played this chauffeur in a similar period. And I thought, well, what else is there to do? I mean, I didn't have to prepare for that one except for the French accent. And in this one, there was no dialogue, so I didn't have to do anything. So what was there to do? You know, other than Jean and Berenice, and to some degree Missy Pyle, the rest of us are just normal people, and it's a the film is not silent to us. Mm-hmm. We're talking. It's just not recorded. So, really, just you look at it the way you look at any other part. There is no difference in my mind between a character in a contemporary film and a character in a 20s film where they were just normal people. We tend to look at the acting style as different, but Michel convinced me that it wasn't a style. We weren't trying to recreate the silent film. We were doing a contemporary film, a very available story, but it happened to be told silently and in black and white. So I thought, well, that's fine. I know how to drive a car. I know how to support somebody. I know how to care about somebody. So, but there's no preparation for me. I didn't do any.
When you guys are, preparing your scenes, and when you have your dialogue, and we're watching it, did you guys improv that, or was it prepared beforehand on what you were going to say, or was it different each take?
Well, they took the short story and they made it into a shooting script, so you got sides and you had dialogue. Oh. Like in any other film. My particular instance, I had very little dialogue because the character is on the taciturn side. And doesn't have a whole lot to say, whereas John Goodman, he improvised a lot of. John is very comfortable with improvisation. I love improvisation, but the problem is, of course, you want to be able to improvise in the period. You don't want to put anything in that might sound contemporary, because should somebody read your lips and you say, wow, that's bitchin'. It wouldn't work. So, and really what comes out of your mouth is not what propels the story forward. It's your reaction facially and in your body to what's that. That's the narrative. And your reaction creates in the mind of the audience the narrative. They're telling the story to themselves, because it's, they can't drop down and text their babysitter on their smartphone and hear the story through their ears. They have to watch every frame in order to be able to get this story, and they do. So that when they get to the end of the film and the narrative, as far as they're concerned, has ended, because he's been saved, she's in the room, they're embracing. But the story's not over, because where can it possibly go from there? The audience has no clue as to what the next element will be. And that's where the surprise of sound comes in. Sound, which has been up until then the antagonist in the film, then becomes a co-creator of the narrative. And suddenly there's sound, and there is a place for him in sound. And we are transformed into another paradigm. It's pretty brilliant, this film.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I saw a lot of the film through your eyes, you know? Just because I guess I more identify with you, because you seemed more contemporary. You know what I mean?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Not out of the period, though. I looked like
No. I mean, just I guess maybe I'm more emphasize with you. You know, you're just because there were two huge stars, and you were like an everyman. You know,
I'm just a guy. Yeah, I'm just an ordinary guy. What I really loved that, because what I loved about it was, you know, we tend not to deal with this issue in contemporary films, but that is a relationship between a major star like Brad Pitt and an ordinary Joe who feels no inhibition in talking to or being with or eating a meal with, you know, sitting in that restaurant eating with him at the table. I've been invited into a very fancy restaurant to have lunch.
Yeah.
Because I am his chauffeur, but I'm also a friend. And I loved the sweetness of that relationship, that George Valentine trusts Clinton enough to expose himself, as when he says, you know, I hope the film is good. You know, we're ruined if unless the film is a hit. And, of course, Clifton knows that it's not going to be a hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But he's missed it.
I want to ask you about the true star of the movie, Uggie.
Yeah.
You're no stranger to working with animals. What's that like working with animals on a set, I guess especially Uggie right now? I mean, do you have to do several more takes than normal? Or, like, how does that...
You do less takes than normal with an animal because there's no sound. It means the trainer can give commands during the shot.
I didn't think about that.
So, and it really helps the dog, to focus the dog. A lot of the difficulty of working with animals, of course, is they have to be able to perform the trick basically on their own, especially if you don't want them looking off to the trainer. They have to do it spontaneously.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you always have to worry about where you place the trainer. You have to get the trainer over the shoulder of the person, you know, whose POV it is, so that the dog, in looking at you, the trainer, appears to be looking at the character. But with this, there was no problem, because the trainer could be right over, you know, it's a little hard for Jean, because he's got the gun in his mouth, and he's trying to recreate that moment just before, you know, of desperation and resignation, and the dog is pulling on his pant leg. To me, every time I see that scene, I always hear the dog saying, "Don't do it! Don't do it! Don't do it!" But of course, right over Jean's shoulder was the trainer saying, "You know, pull on the leg, pull on the leg." That is very, very hard to concentrate.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, he gives. Jack Russells are known to be a very smart breed, and you know. It's a wonderful performance, but animals usually give wonderful performances. They give wonderful performances if they're directed properly. And that's another thing in Michel's favor. He knows it's a dog. He does not think of it as a movie star. And he photographs it and gives it things to do that are dog-like. Now, the fact that it buries its head in its paw or falls down, those are the tricks that he's been taught, and it's the same sort of trick that George does when he's on the stage. You know, he knows it's a performance. That's the performing seal part of our business.
When you're on the set, do you know you have something that you had something special?
Well. Yes and no. I mean, if you look in the first time I went to the set and I saw just a small little snippet of a scene with all the producers and directors waiting outside the John Goodman's character's office, and it was lit and costumed and peopled in such a way that it could have been right out. I mean, I've seen that picture in a movie magazine. It was so accurate. And I thought, wow, oh, that's incredible. They are really getting this look, I thought. Now, you never know, however, how the story will hold together. Can you actually tell a love story in contemporary terms? Because you can't just tell a love story in the silent vernacular, the silent era vernacular, because we don't have the same assumptions. They're different. There are more sophisticated assumptions now, it seems to me. And then, will you be able to tell a story without cynicism, without the sort of aloofness and coolness that sort of characterizes, you know, a contemporary relationship, you know, Harry met Sally, you know? You're just always too hip, you know? And that would spoil this picture. So he got a performance out of Uggie, and he got a performance out of All of Us, which is his sweet and innocent and present and engaging and delightful.
Yeah, I could watch it 100 times and just still love it. Did you read about the UK moviegoers who wanted their money back because they didn't realize the film was silent?
Yeah, they're always coming up with these things. I mean, how does that? Who do you think phoned that in? Do you think the theater owner said, "Wow, what a great story! I got to call the Daily Mail"? I really don't think so. And anyway, why didn't the theater manager say to them, "Listen, I'll give you double your money back, but I want you to go back in and watch the entire picture. And if at the end of that picture you still want your money, I'll give it to you."
That's true.
Why? Okay, so you would leave after 5 minutes, but wouldn't somebody say to you, "Yeah, but you don't want to miss this"? So, you know, this is sort of like the Kim Novak ad. I think that there's an effort on the part of some people who shall remain nameless to find a way to cast a little caca on the response that people have to the artist, because their multi-million dollar films can't generate that kind of response.
Yeah. What was the worst audition you've ever had?
Oh, they were all the worst. I loathed auditions from day one. And the only audition I ever liked, I went for a theater audition for the theater communications group, and my friend and I got up and we sang a song. That's all we did. We didn't read anything. We just sang a song.
And that was it?
But that was it. We didn't get the job either. But I've had auditions where I actually cried out of frustration and pain and had a casting person say to me, "Do you have a cold, Jamie?" So I had a big chip on my shoulder because of my father, you know, and I finally, I missed a lot of things with I got the first things that I auditioned for, All in the Family. I auditioned for that. I had a great time. Murder by Death, I auditioned for that. But as time went on, I got to resent it more and more. And finally, a director said to me, I said, "What did I do different in this audition that you gave me this job?" He said, "Jamie, it has nothing to do with your audition. It's just whether you fit the picture that the person has in their head or not." And so I've always loathed it, and that was a wonderful thing about getting an Academy Award nomination. You never have to audition again.
That would be great, just that alone.
Just that alone. One of the perks.
What's your advice to actors?
Oh, my advice to actors is, you mean people who want to work in the film?
Yeah, yeah. Film theater, yeah.
I tell everybody, I speak a lot at schools, not a lot, I'd like to speak more, but when I do get a chance to, and they always say to me, you know, "I'm going to go to Hollywood, how do I get an agent?" And I say, "Man, I can't tell you, if I could tell you what a snake that place is for young actors. You get off the bus, you know, there are 150 people just like you, and some of them have, you know, entree into the business, and it's impossible, and it's so hard. Stay at home. Get a group of you together in your own hometown. Find out the stories that need to be told about that particular place, and that you can tell about yourselves. Do your own work. Create your own work. Find a way to get it on YouTube or get it on Facebook or get it in, you know, four wall it or show it in people's homes. Learn your craft by creating your craft as an artist, not as a supernumerary or a flunky in some television show that doesn't give a crap about your aspirations or your artistry. That's what I tell them.
Thank you so much, James, and thank you guys for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. Thank you so much for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.